Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, Lorraine Stevenson of the Manitoba Cooperator discusses new water legislation coming to that province. The Manitoba Cooperator's Alan Dawson highlights changes to Canadian wheat classes arriving this August. And Dave Sims of Commodity News Service Canada fills us in on flea beetles, oil seeds, and trade. Plus, stay tuned for your chance to win free tickets to Farm Progress Show. That's all on Between the Rows with this week's host, Gord Gilmore.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. Later in the show, we'll be talking to Commodity News Service's Dave Sims about a flea beetle threat and the grain market, and the Manitoba Cooperator's Alan Dawson about an important deadline for wheat deliveries. Up first, though, we're joined by Lorraine Stevenson, also of the Manitoba Cooperator, to tell us about some water and wetland legislation passed in that province that some are calling historic. Lorraine, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Gord.
So Bill 7, the Sustainable Watersheds Act, has just received royal assent in Manitoba, making it law. It ushers in a new strategy for water management in the province. Give us a bit of background on this new legislation.
Okay, so as you say, Bill 7 is legislation that's all about water. It amended a variety of acts in the province, including the Water Protection and Water Rights Act, plus the legislation governing Manitoba's conservation districts and Manitoba Habitat Heritage Corporation. This is one of the first steps of the province towards putting in place actions as outlined under the water pillar of Manitoba's Climate and Green Plan. So what it's going to do is it strengthens current legislation towards a watershed-based framework to protect wetlands and water in general. So it's going to address a whole range of activities that negatively impact wetlands as well as lakes and rivers. And the Sustainable Watersheds Act is also the way in which Manitoba will implement its growing outcomes in watersheds program, or GROW for short. And that is based on the alternative land use services model that a lot of farmers would be more familiar with, which, of course, is about paying landowners for the ecological goods and services that their landscapes provide.
And one of the things I noted was that there was some new requirements being put in place to ensure drainage activity don't result in the loss of a certain class of wetlands. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so the province is emphasizing that under this new approach, they want to see no net loss of wetland benefits. So just as a reminder, when wetlands get drained, and we are losing over 2,000 hectares a year in the province, it is estimated that 1,000 tons of P and phosphorus and 55,000 tons of nitrogen enter our lakes and waterways every year. So significant nutrient loading can be reduced when wetlands are kept intact. And that's what's meant when we talk about them as being functionally important habitats. So this new approach is set out to protect seasonal, semi-permanent, and permanent wetlands, or classes 3, 4, and 5. And that's set out in a system called the Stewart and Cantron Wetland Classification System. I'm sorry, I can't tell you more about that. That is going to be further defined in regulation, which is still under development. So the new requirements, the province says in those few cases where drainage of a wetland may be justified, mitigation will be required to ensure there's no net loss of wetland benefits. So I understand that to mean there has to be a way found to prevent those negative impacts of draining that wetland.
So does that necessarily mean replacing it with another wetland or some other mitigation strategy?
Well, I don't think it necessarily means replacement. It just means that you can't lose the benefit of that wetland. So I think we'll know a lot more about this as the regulation unrolls around this.
And I think that's the key distinction is we have a law now, but we do not yet have regulations. Is that so?
Correct. Those are still under development. Yeah.
So then what type of drainage projects might be allowed under this stuff? Do we have any sense of that?
Yeah. Well, they say, the province says drainage projects will be categorized. There will be what's called high-risk, high-impact projects and low-risk, low-impact projects. You will have to register low-impact, low-risk waterworks projects. So, again, what the legislation is going to enable is a regulatory approach for licensing of these kinds of waterworks and drainage works. So it will allow low-risk, low-impact drainage projects. Again, they have to be registered, but only provided that that project will fit within a defined class and the proponent adheres to regulatory standards. Higher-risk projects will continue to be authorized through the licensing process. So again, Gord, that sounds pretty complicated, but regulations are being developed right now to set out specific classes of registerable projects. So a lot more information to come. But just what I also learned from the province last week is that they do expect to include projects such as culvert for culvert replacements or construction of new minor works or water control works that won't affect prescribed wetlands. That would be under the low risk category. And the whole idea behind this dual track review process is to reduce the wait times for approvals for lower risk projects. I'm told that the review period will take 14 days, and if it meets the standards outlined, the proponent goes ahead.
So then what about what's being put in place for inspection and enforcement around drainage? Do we know anything about that yet?
Well, they are just saying that registered projects will be audited and inspected to ensure compliance. I do not know at this time specifically how that happens, but we do know that the penalties for illegal drainage under the Water Rights Act have been brought in line with penalties under such legislation as the Water Protection Act and the Environment Act. So much higher fines for illegal drainage. An offense will go from $10,000 now to $50,000 for an individual, and from $25,000 to as much as $500,000 for a corporation.
So that's a pretty big stick. What about the carrot, though? There was a carrot in this as well, and that was the incentives and payments that farmers might expect to receive. Do we have any sense of what that might look like?
Yeah, exactly. That's a very key piece of this Sustainable Watersheds Act. The government, of course, did a lot of consultation on this, and right now it's Departments of Sustainable Development and Manitoba Agriculture. They're still considering the feedback it has received from farmers about how to develop the GROW program, which, of course, is the program through which those incentive and payments would flow. What I've been told thus far is what's envisioned is that the types of practices and the payment schemes will be tailored to local needs, depending on the location and types of practices suitable to the watershed's needs. So,
well, thanks for running us through that, Lorraine. I'm sure we'll be talking to you again as more of these regulations come into effect.
You're very welcome, Gord.
That was Lorraine Stevenson of the Manitoba Cooperator on changes to water and wetland regulations in that province. You're listening to Between the Rows, and I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. Later, we'll talk to CNS Canada's Dave Sims about flea beetles in the grain markets, but up next is Alan Dawson on wheat delivery deadlines. This is Between the Rows, and I'm this week's host, Gord Gilmore. Alan, thanks for joining us.
Hi.
So a deadline's been set regarding delivery of some wheats that are moving classes. Can you run us through what's changing and why that deadline's important?
Well, the change is that 24 wheat varieties that were in the Canadian Western Red Spring class, and four that have been in the Canada Prairie spring red class are moving to a new class called the Canadian Northern Hard Red class, August 1. So the CWRS, the Canadian Western Red Spring class, is the dominant class of wheat in Western Canada. It's the class that has the wheats that are best suited for milling and baking. And those changes are taking place August 1.
So then what about this deadline that's been set for August 1st?
Well, it's that's when the change in classes will occur. Those varieties that are in the CWRS class are going to be moving to the new CNHR class.
And then they have to deliver them, if they want to deliver them as CWRS, by August 1 then?
Oh, yeah, that's right. The if you want those varieties to remain in the CWRS class and get paid accordingly, farmers have to get, or should be trying to get, those varieties delivered before the August 1 deadline. There is the grain companies have until December 31st to clear the system of those varieties. So in other words, if they buy a wheat that's in the CWRS class on July 31st, and of course it changes classes August 1st, that wheat purchased on July 31st will remain in the CWRS class so far as the Grain Commission is concerned, for the grain company until December 31st, so they can clear it out of the system.
Is that much lag time really necessary to clear it through the system? So that's what, 5 months?
That's right. The grain companies think 5 months might even be a little bit tight, but that's what they agreed to. And they feel they're going to need that time to get everything cleared out, so that they don't end up having paid for something that was in one class and on export being in another.
And that's a bit of an economic hit to them if that happens, is that right?
That's right, because the CWRS class is the premium class, and generally prices for wheats in that class are higher than some of the other classes, although should note that with the CNHR class, some of the varieties in there are higher yielding, so with yield times price, sometimes that might be a more profitable option for farmers. But generally, the CWRS is the price or the class that most farmers deliver to, because it has the best return.
So then, in practical terms for farmers, other than delivering by August 1, what is this going to mean for them? For example, I think I read in your article that there's going to be an issue with grower declarations.
That's right. Well, that's the grower declarations is something that's been around for many years now, sort of post kernel visual distinguishability that ended in 2008. So we had this system where wheats in different classes had to look like that class. They had a specific look. That was ended, and that system allowed buyers to visually identify the class of wheat. When that disappeared, then they brought in these declarations, which were essentially a legal document, an affidavit, declaring that, what I'm delivering is entitled to go to the class that I'm intending it to go to. So it's meant to prevent farmers from misrepresenting the class of wheat that they are delivering.
So the thing they have to remember then is, if they even unintentionally misrepresent this, if it slips their mind that it's changed, they do have a liability issue there.
That's right, Gord. That's a good point. I think that that's something the grain industry is hoping that farmers will be aware of, that wheat like Harvest, for example, which was quite popular in Western Canada, is a CWRS wheat right now and will be until July 31st. But on August 1, it goes to a different class, the CNHR class. And so if they're delivering on August 1 and declare, you know, that their harvest wheat, for example, is CWRS, well, that's a misdeclaration.
Thanks, Alan. That's an interesting situation and one that we'll keep an eye on.
Thanks.
That was Alan Dawson of the Manitoba Cooperator on class changes for certain wheat varieties and how that will affect deliveries in the coming months. This is Between the Rows, and I'm this week's host, Gord Gilmore. Now we're joined by Dave Sims of Commodity News Service Canada. Thanks for joining us, Dave.
Hey, good to be here.
So, Dave, flea beetles. You reported that flea beetles are particularly bad this year. How widespread has that problem been?
Well, they're pretty much being felt across all the prairies and Ontario, like Drumheller to pretty much a wide swath of Saskatchewan over here to Manitoba. The problem's not everywhere, though. I talked to a guy around Winnipeg who he farms about 20 minutes away, and he has a lot of canola, and he hasn't seen any, so it's not like it's anywhere, but there are some areas in central Saskatchewan, western Saskatchewan, I know, are being hit by them pretty hard.
And what's been driving that then? If it's spotty, that suggests that maybe there's some variables that are driving the issue.
Yeah, the dryness tends to be an issue. And like they do better when it's dry, and they tend to do pretty good when the crop is just starting out and it's dry. Because most of the canola seeds you buy have the neonicotinoids, which is a great barrier for the first couple of weeks. But when the plant establishes and it starts to grow bigger, well, the chemical solution in the plant gets diluted, and that's when the beetles can take advantage and chew the leaves without dying. And you're not going to see them if you're moving. You have to stand still to see the thing. It's only about half the size of a pinhead. So it's the leaves that will tell the tale, because you'll see holes in them, and that's when you know you have them. And you better move fast, because they can devastate a crop in short order. They can walk, fly, jump, so they get around pretty fast.
So speaking of devastating crops in short order, has this then resulted in much reseeding or infield treatments, that sort of thing?
Well, I've heard of some reseeding. I wouldn't say it's a lot yet. Like, we're past a lot of deadlines for crop insurance now, so I'm not sure we're going to see much reseeding going forward. Spraying is obviously the most obvious solution, and that's been happening pretty well across the prairies. It's a lot of work. A lot of producers would rather aerial spray for the beetles, but it's more expensive than ground spraying, obviously. The difference, of course, is that when you're ground spray, you're on the field with a chemical, so you have to take a lot of precautions. And so it takes more time than hitting them from the air. But, we are seeing spraying on the prairies for sure.
All right, thanks for that little roundup of that. Turning to your other area of expertise, grain markets. We've seen agriculture markets under pressure these days. Any sense of whether that's going to continue or is it going to start to ease? What's your sense of it all?
Well, the general bias seems to be pointed lower. I think most crops in North America are off to a good start, generally speaking, and it probably a big reason prices are down. Like, if the U.S. gets solid, timely rains between now and the third week of June, I think we could see the downturn continue because, I mean, there's definitely still some dryness in the U.S. If the trade situation between the U.S. and China improves, and like the tariff on U.S. soybeans is removed, well, that would result in a flood of soybeans being sold to China. And that would give soybeans a boost in the market and, by extension, canola. The U.S. and Mexico is also a situation that could affect the market. Like, there's some ideas Mexico could slap tariffs on U.S. corn, which is something that would normally be unheard of, as Mexico is their biggest corn customer.
So what are some of the other factors affecting canola?
Well, like when it comes to canola, the traders have started to roll their positions forward in the market. So the most traded month isn't July anymore, it's November. That's where the focus is. And when we saw the prices started to fall last week, some large funds, they just sold their July positions outright. And the commercials were only too happy to pick them up. So, like, with the technicals pointed lower, there are ideas that the funds could be looking to move to the short side of the market. I think canola's November contract could definitely move down to the $500 per ton mark reasonably soon. Breaking below that could be tougher, though, as there's going to be some technical support at that level. But, like, if we get any prolonged dry spells up here, that could firm up our prices. as, like, the canola crop isn't overly saturated by any stretch. There are some sections in southwestern Alberta and southeastern Alberta and southwestern Saskatchewan that still need way more rain than they have now. Farmer selling is slowed up. A lot of producers can get $11 for new crop and $12 for old. So they're hanging onto their supplies right at the moment. And then that's lending strength to the market, too.
And earlier you were speaking a bit about the trade-related turmoil, and there's been a lot of it, especially surrounding NAFTA, even more globally. You alluded to the China-U.S. situation. And I'm sure that's certainly been weighing in on all the agriculture markets. But where are we at with that? Do you think that it's kind of working its way through? Do we have a lot of sort of unknowns that we're still pondering? What's your general sense of how and when and if that's going to resolve?
No, I think the big unknown is the president of the U.S. But the soybean market, the July contract dropped over 50 cents last week, and that's pretty severe. So we are seeing the volatility and the turmoil by the trade relationships. As far as whether we're close to coming out of it, I have no idea. Like, when it comes to NAFTA, we've heard, bits and pieces about they're close to this, close to that, but we still haven't seen anything. There's a few, I suppose you could say, maybe minor silver linings to this. Like, canola is getting a bit more interest from Chinese buyers. If China reaches a deal with the U.S., then their interest in our canola could weaken a touch. Because right now they're importing as many soybeans as possible from Brazil, but it still isn't enough to satisfy them. Like, China needs those U.S. supplies. So the only option for them is to take the 25% tariff hit on U.S. beans or look elsewhere for oil seeds. But with this summer, I think volatility is going to be the name of the game, because you have a crop that is off to a good start, but it's still dry. So any prolonged dryness could start to raise markets. And then you've got the trade situation, which changes daily. So I think there is the chance for prices to spike quite rapidly, quite quickly. So I think traders in general will be leery of that moving forward. I see that throughout the whole summer.
Well, thanks for that rundown of a very complex situation, Dave. That's another edition of Between the Rows. I'm your host, Gord Gilmore, saying we hope you'll join us again next week. And in the meantime, stay safe.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.